You're listening to The Road to Shambhala. This is Exit 24. All right, hello everybody. We are here on The Road to Shambhala. This is Exit 24, and we are very excited to be with you. We have a very special hello to all of you tuning in to the live stream. If you're in New York City, I hope you got yourself a hot toddy, something of that nature, because it is mad belligerent outside today. I'm your host, Sam Dingman, and on this 12-12 edition of the program, we are very pleased to be joined by Mr. Jesse Andrews, who forms one half of the band The Young Dads. We'll be talking to him a little bit later about his work with that tunefully hilarious organization. And we are, of course, joined by America's Sweethearts, Alan Boom Boom Smith, and Garrett the Spleazy G's Hall. Gentlemen, good afternoon to all of you.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
What's up?
Hey, thank you, Sam.
I'm very excited to have you all here on this horrible day. It's a wonderful day life-wise, just a terrible day weather-wise. We're going to begin, of course, as we always do, by playing a game that we like to call Quality Control. As you know, Quality Control is a part of the show where we assign rankings of 0 to 5 stars to various pressing cultural matters of the moment. And today, we will be looking at 3 items.
Next, we have a very, very big group by the name of...
I like this group. That's the Quality Control theme song. It's the song Quality Control by Jurassic 5.
Very clever.
That was sick.
So the things I thought we could discuss today on Quality Control are the following. Number one, the kindness of strangers. How do we feel about the kindness of strangers? I'd like to dedicate this portion of the show to 2 strangers in particular. The first is the super cute barista with the cutoff jean shorts at Grey Dog Coffee on Greenwich Avenue, who let me keep the Lobster House Amber Ale and Spiced Chai Tea I was attempting to purchase for myself and Alan Smith, despite the fact that my credit card got declined.
Ooh.
I would also like to...
WikiLeaks.
Yeah. It's their fault. I blame them. I also want to extend this dedication to the affable chap who runs Penny House Coffee over here on Washington Avenue, whose response when I went in the last 2 days in a row and paid for my egg sandwich in dimes and pennies was, without hint of sarcasm, "Thanks, buddy. This is great. I was running low on coins."
Aww.
Now, each of these folks...
I'm going to point something out here. Mm-hmm. To date, you have not mentioned any strangers, but you've mentioned people who are trying to get you to buy things.
Ooh. Well, that's true. That's true. But the reason I want to dedicate it to them is because they would have been well within their rights as New Yorkers to give me a very hard time about these 2 situations when I pulled what can only be described as deadbeat moves.
Mm.
But they didn't do that. So I want to give them 5 stars and a healthy scoop of gratitude. I wonder how you guys feel about the kindness of strangers.
Undependable.
Dependable, okay.
I can't think of anything to deduct a star from it, so I have to go with 5 stars.
Right.
I mean, when it's working, it's working. It's great. Mm-hmm. But
the only problem I have with it is the infrequency here in the city of New York.
Yes.
Mm. Well, that's where part of my 5-star ranking actually comes from, is that I was very shocked that these people who, you know, I mean, what I was expecting to happen when I was like, "What up? I ain't got no money and I need your services." I was expecting them to be like, "Why don't you leave my establishment with all speed?" But they didn't do that.
I was recently parked in a bike lane and was waiting for the light to change. And a delivery guy with his cart came up to me and said, "Move." Standing there looking at me, and I was like, "Just a second, the light's going to change." And then he ran into me on my bike with his cart.
See, this is the type of 0-star behavior,
right? So
that leads me to give these guys 5 stars.
But I mean, so the question is,
that's not kindness.
Are we rating the idea of kindness of strangers against the times that it occurs, or the general milieu of stranger behavior?
Oh, I see. That's a fair distinction.
That's true. It's like rating like a magical bowl that constantly refills with a soup that you want. And I mean, that's great. Does it exist?
Right.
Not
right,
a
right,
whole
right.
lot.
Exactly.
Also, I'll throw this in there. I was just you know, I was somewhat inebriated a couple nights ago.
Scandalous.
And I was coming
home. Yeah, get out of my studio, sir.
I know. Oh, how dare I?
I know.
And I was
hang on, I got to drink some wine.
Yeah, me too. While talking.
Yeah.
I was coming home from this party up in Washington Heights, actually, to Brooklyn. So it's a very long subway ride. So it was just kind of like tottering back and forth, mm-hmm. very end of the night. And this guy, you know, who looks somewhat the worst for wear, comes and sits down across from me and some of my friends. You know, we make eye contact. It's kind of like New Yorker eye contact
yep.
where you're engaging this person. But then he's like, man, what the hell are you looking at? Why are you looking at me like that, man? Why you got, you know, and I'm like, wait, how am I looking at you? But here's the thing. So that wasn't very kind of him.
No,
you know,
no.
Or, I mean, maybe not kind, but it didn't obey like the conventions of interaction
right.
that we want. But it led to a somewhat magical, like 2 hour interaction with this guy where I just hung out with him and we drank malt liquor on a stoop.
Whoa. So you made friends.
I kind of made a friend. I mean, it was also, it felt like I was in a very emotionally manipulative movie like with like Robert Downey Jr. and Jamie Foxx or something like that. Like we literally parted after he like fell asleep on my body in the subway station, which was like, yeah, like just funny and sad. And I was like, what the fuck life am I leading? This
yeah.
is not who I am.
I give that story 5 stars.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you.
That, I mean, regardless of how we're defining the kindness of strangers, you have just redeemed the entire genre with that tale,
oh,
I think.
That's
although it
high
doesn't
praise.
it doesn't fall into the kindness of strangers category at all that
yeah,
well.
That's true. I guess the mistake that I made in doing this is it would be similar to if I had said how would we rank lamps without specifying whether or not it was a magic lamp or just a lamp that illuminates corners.
But that's the quality control board's job, is to sift through these finer distinctions.
Right. I mean, it's our job to help people clarify
that's
things.
That's why we're making yeah. the big bucks.
Yeah.
Where's
yeah.
the quality control? Quality control.
Oh, man. Man.
Another segment.
Yeah, we're totally unregulated right now. I mean, you know, we're
like
and
Wall Street.
We haven't thought at all about the repercussions of the rankings that we're giving.
It's true.
Like Wall Street.
Like Wall Street.
Like Wall Street. Speaking of emotionally manipulative movies, yeah. who saw the sequel to Wall Street? That was fantastic. All right. Well, I think we've pretty clearly assessed the kindness of strangers. I think that's unequivocal. The next one I would like to analyze is throwing Joe Lieberman out of an airplane. And I want to draw a distinction here.
Eight stars.
All of the stars.
Now, before you apply your rankings, I want to clarify that I'm not talking about how many stars would you give Joe Lieberman himself, because that would be fodder for an entire podcast. Just the act of throwing him out of an airplane. And I'll give you a little bit of context, as if you need any.
Context, airplane.
Right.
You are on it
go.
With Joe Lieberman.
The context. You're on an airplane with Joe Lieberman. There is a door you can open.
Yeah. Or just a hole.
Right. Yeah. Or no hole, but you have a chainsaw. So almost exactly 1 year ago, we sat in front of these very microphones and we called for the forcible ejection of United States Senator Joe Lieberman from a moving airplane. Our ire had been aroused, as you will recall, by his obstruction and snake bitchery regarding health care reform. However, this week, this man, whose reputation we so willfully sullied, said the following on national television.
The harsh reality here, and we're dealing, those of us who support the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we're in an effort to try to undo what we think is an injustice that is inconsistent with American values, because it doesn't judge people based on how they do the job, in this case in the military, but by who they are, in this case their sexual orientation.
So that's Joe Lieberman coming to the bold defense of Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation, which even though it failed in the vote this week, he has now introduced as a freestanding piece of legislation. Mm. And he seems to think there are enough votes to get this going. I, because of this, am going to take 1 star away from the way that I would have ranked the act of throwing Joe Lieberman out of an airplane prior to this moment, which was 3 stars. I felt that was a 3-star activity, because though I believe in the motivation behind it. I can't totally get behind murder.
He might not die, though.
That's true.
It's true.
Nothing can kill him.
That's true, yeah.
People have tried. Yeah.
He's certainly immune to humiliation.
I would also point out that there's a good chance that with his the current, like, facial structure that he is in, like, has going on, he probably would parachute to safety. His jowls would carry him.
His trademark droopy dog cheek jaggles. But, you know, assuming that this would be result in a fatality, the removal of him from the airplane, I felt that that was 3 stars. But because he's doing this, I'm going to take that now down to 2 stars. How do we feel about this?
See, to me, it seems like he's pandering here. Like, on individual issues, Lieberman is fine. But the way that he sticks himself out just when, like, for example, as this is going on, he's also providing a necessary vote for the tax compromise that's so heinous.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that that it's just another example of Joe Lieberman thinking that he is the most important man in the government. I mean, I happen to agree with him on this one, but as his previous stands have indicated, he really likes being number 60 on wherever that ends up putting him down. I'm still giving it 5 stars.
Still giving it 5 stars.
Five.
Yeah, he's like the Anthony Kennedy of the Senate, and that makes him just infuriating. Yeah,
you can't get rid of him. So if you have this chance, you have to take it.
Here's the thing. Don't ask, don't tell. Is there a worse name for, like, a government policy? Like, period. Like, it's a terrible name. Like, don't ask makes it sort of sound as though, like, being gay is equivalent to... You know, I had a really bad day. Don't ask. You don't want to know. Like, how did they name it?
It's very It's very flip. And I also wonder how our founding fathers would feel about an official piece of government policy that has a contraction in it.
Two contractions.
Yeah. Here's
the other thing. Thomas Jefferson. Here's the ending of the apostrophe.
They ask.
Right.
They ask all the fucking time.
Yeah.
This whole like don't ask, don't tell thing. No. They're constantly asking.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There should be like government policy where it's also like high school, like you might want to keep it a secret,
right?
Or someone's gonna make you eat your underwear. Yeah.
That's policy
that
right
should
now.
That should not be our U.S. Military policy.
Also, this is like a minor thing, but I kind of want don't ask, don't tell, stay around because in the event that I get drafted, I know if I was sent to the front lines, I'd poop my pants. But
you just kiss a guy, you're out.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I would bone a dude and be like, see you later. Yeah.
So some dudes are gay for pay. You're gay for avoiding military
safety.
Service.
I think a lot of us would be.
Yeah, dude.
Right. I mean, that's Let just a fight, loophole man. That you could drive a truck.
Right, right, right.
You know, a fuck truck. Sorry, that's the first swear.
No, but it's a good one. It's a good one.
It's gold.
It's well worth it, yeah. Early front runner for title of the episode, actually. Either fuck truck or drive the fuck truck through the loophole. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how much room iTunes allows. For
I actually make my girlfriend say that when we're having sex.
That full phrase, drive the fuck truck through the loophole?
Drive your fuck truck through my loophole.
Gotcha, gotcha. And she acquiesces to this request, I assume?
Yeah, she's great on it.
Oh, good.
It was her idea.
So it's not like a source of relationship drama or anything.
No. She's a good policy.
Thing, it's a good thing you're in New York because that sex act is illegal in most states.
Texas for sure.
Kind of like being gay and being in the military. Yeah. All right, the last thing that I think we ought to analyze here is there's a new adjective that's been burning up the charts, the adjective charts. And it was invented by this man, Garrett Hall.
What's up? 5 stars automatically.
Yeah. Garrett's ranking is predetermined on this one. You may actually have to recuse yourself from this because it's going to be hard for you to be...
Oh, no. Don't play that game. Okay.
Now, partiality is an interesting thing to talk about here because the adjective that Garrett invented is... jurisprudent. And it's a way that you can describe your friends and neighbors in the legal profession if you feel they exercise particularly sound judgment in the execution of their duties. Now, I personally have to give it 3.5 stars. Sorry, did I say duties?
Sorry.
I should have said tasks.
You really gave it an oomph, too. You were like, duties.
Little duties.
Yeah. They kind of had these like little cloudy brackets around it. It's great. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I personally, I respect and admire the notion of a completely unbiased judiciary, but I feel that being 100% impartial implies a certain conservatism and lack of passion that I find a little bit distasteful. So though I applaud Garrett for coming up with this adjective, I can only give the ideal itself 3.5 stars.
Yeah, if we're not talking about the actual word, that's different. I mean,
what's the word again?
Jurisprudent.
Now, I think, isn't that the name of a blog on Slate.com by Emily Bazelon? Oh.
Don't worry, this computer has the internet.
Oh, sick.
What is this Slate magazine right? with less
I just heard about it. It's
reach than the Road to Shambhala.
Well, I know. It's a fringe thing, and I accept that. But I might have to give it fewer stars than I was previously going to give it mm-hmm. based on the fact that it may exist out there in the world already.
All right. Well, Garrett, I would have to... I'm going to have to take away the credential that you invented the word. It does mm-hmm. appear to have existed previously. So, sorry.
That's
about
fine,
that.
Though. I have other words that I ripped from Merriam-Webster.
Actually, answers.com is what we're...
Right, yeah, answers.com.
However, I will say this is good that I can now be partial, not just have to give it a knee-jerk 5 stars.
Okay, good, yes.
Because to me, like... When I was describing this concept of being jurisprudent, mm-hmm. in my mind, it's what lawyers call other lawyers is like the highest compliment.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because they're the like, most jurisprudent.
Exactly. Like, I feel like after 4 years of soul-sucking law school, like, the idea of being like this, like, completely dispassionate robot when it comes to evaluating circumstances both legal and in life mm-hmm. is the highest compliment you can pay someone. However, for someone outside of law school, I think that... jurisprudence like turns you into a, like basically like a unhuman robot or something.
Yeah, the law doesn't actually have much to do with like people as mm-hmm. near as I can tell. Like,
and yet lawyers live every moment like they're in front of a judge.
Right.
Yeah. Like Elena Kagan, for example, spent her entire life saying absolutely nothing which could ever be used against her. So she in that level is the model of living the jurisprudent lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. True.
But it's made her less of a human being.
I give this 4.5 stars. I think it's great because what you did here was you took an existing word and you repurposed it such that now it means the thing that we think it should mean when we just hear it, when we stumble across it. And so we don't have to like, you know, say like, oh, that lawyer is awfully jurisprudent. I really like it. And then like some obnoxious law school grad comes always like, well, actually, jurisprudent, that's what mean with, because the notion of prudence is sort of encoded. And you're like, oh, God, I'm going to murder you.
So that's, which would not be very jurisprudent.
Yeah. Which would not be jurisprudent.
So I have 4.5, not 5 because, you know, I'm hard.
Well, and because, I mean, let's be honest.
Compared to throwing Joe Lieberman out of an airplane, which is not a jurisprudent act.
Yeah, that's the opposite.
It's a prudent act.
It's a prudent act. Prudent. It's just regular prudent.
A passion prudent.
You don't need it. You don't need a degree to understand the value of that.
The right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if you look at judicial history or whatever, like the cool Supreme Courts are the ones that did not show jurisprudence and were like, all right, we're just going to like rewrite the law here and make some stuff happen. Like Brown versus Board of Education was probably not jurisprudent.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
But it was awesome.
Yeah. Mm. It was jurish. a little bit of the juris zhuzh is what they displayed there, I think. All right, cool. All right, well, I think that's it for quality control. I think we've come to some very important conclusions here. Although this new question of who administers quality control to the quality control board is, I mean, that's hanging in the air.
Sort of Damocles.
How can we move on from this?
I don't know.
Everyone, change places.
Right. I'm going to play some music. We're going to get a little Chinese fire drill happening here. I'm hung up on the fact that just now when you said Sword of Damocles, I at first heard that as sort of, comma, Damocles. Oh. I was like, Damocles is not my name. Don't come calling me Damocles. But then I figured it out, so I'm not mad at you anymore.
yeah, touch and go there for a while.
Yeah. A close shave.
For a couple seconds there, we almost had a revolt.
He was about to pull out his sword and sword you.
Well, sort of. He was going to sort of.
I was going to be like, and poke you. My son. All right. So in a minute, we're going to come back, and we're going to have our interview with Jesse Andrews of The Young Dads, whose voice you've already been hearing on this segment. But first, we're going to hear a little bit of Viz Queen. This is the song Tall Grass. You're one in the same. Two twins in love electrical. Thought you All right. That is Viz Queen with Tall Grass. And as we have alluded to, we are here with Jesse Andrews from the band The Young Dads. I want to tell you guys, the first time I ever saw you was at the Gotham Comedy Club.
Oh.
It's yourself playing the bass.
Yeah.
And Micah is the other gentleman in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And he plays, is it called a cajon?
Cajon, yeah.
Cajon.
Yeah.
And it's like a drum you can sit on. Is this
exactly
a
yeah.
fair way of describing it?
Yeah. Or you could also describe it as just furniture that sounds a little better than other furniture when you hit it.
Okay, yeah.
It's above average in that regard.
Right.
So, we play bass and cajon. It's a kind of unconventional instrumentation. And I wish I could say that we had come to it in a more deliberative way, but that's just the instrument that he had, and I only play bass. I play some keyboard, but
cool.
That's a much less mobile instrument.
Yes.
And we played in another group before moving to New York, and so we moved here. We're both very, very unemployed and just kind of hung out.
Not just a little unemployed, very
yeah,
unemployed.
Yeah. Oh my God, we were so far from employment. It's like we could not see employment from our house. And rather than really seriously look for employment, we said, hey, you know what? What we should really do with our time is sit around and compose songs that might not even be humorous to anyone
right.
who's not us.
Well, you failed in that regard because I found them humorous very much.
Thank you.
And it seemed like everybody else in the room when I saw you guys found them very hilarious too. And it's a great gag because so you're called the Young Dads,
mm-hmm.
and you're wearing like kind of corporate attire. If I remember correctly, you even had like pens and pencils like behind your ears.
yeah, we did.
And like button-down shirts and khakis. And then you also had, and this was one of my favorite parts of it, a PowerPoint presentation running behind you. That like had key bullet points from the songs, was fantastic.
I'm glad you like that. Yeah, PowerPoint is I would say that it's an underused comedy tool. Yeah, although now it's becoming more common. You know, you will see it. We actually,
especially among the employed.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the horrible irony of it, is that we have pretty good PowerPoint skills. And, you know,
still can't get a job.
We're using them to like sing songs about, you know,
Excel and
Excel. Well, like how, you know, just these ludicrous songs, and you know, we have to explain that to our parents. Like, yes, I'm the master of the Microsoft Office suite. Do not work in an office. So it's pretty much the worst of both worlds.
I somehow developed this office-specific skill completely independent of a career in the office.
We have spent some time working in offices, and we think that the corporate world is very, very funny.
Yeah.
It's just a deeply funny place.
Right. Kind of a black, dark comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just this world of bizarro conventions and power dynamics that cause people to behave in indefensible ways. And yet, like, there are a lot of echoes of high school and middle school and elementary school. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, but, like, you have to, like, put this sort of, you have to present these very old childish problems in a dignified way.
Right.
So you can't just go like, Greg will let me use a copier. It's like, well, I think that Greg is monopolizing the copier for, you know.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's a funny place.
Yeah. Well, let me backtrack a little bit then. And so it's the two of you guys, and you you play these kind of interesting instruments that give you this really great kind of, like you see a lot of comedy duo bands where it's one guy who plays the acoustic guitar and the other guy sings.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this very unique sound. A lot of your songs are kind of pointedly making fun of exactly that kind of culture. Is that fair to say? Like,
a lot of them, certainly not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of wide ranging. We have terrible attention spans. So like we can't even get through writing a song without thinking like, okay, wait a minute. What if we had this song where we combined like a catchy Latin beat with a guy who's in love with his wife because she makes like a really good salad. Like, you know, just like this convoluted thing that clearly is actually not that funny. And yet we have a song. I mean, we've never performed it. We'll never perform it. It's just like, you had me at balsamic. Oh, you had my love when you made the big ass salad with balsamic. Like,
which is great in a room. Like, yeah, see, you guys are laughing at
it. I love it, yeah.
If you get on a stage and do that, though, people will, they will look askance at you.
They'll throw their salad tongs.
Yeah, they will. Right, like, they will. You'll be covered in croutons.
Well, I've lost my appetite, honey.
Yeah.
That's a very skeptical man in your audience, by the way. That's
right. He talks, who is just disgusted.
Yeah.
He should not be eating while watching us. I think that's rule number that's rule number
one. Takeaway.
Yeah.
But that's because you'll spit out your food with laughter, though.
One hopes. Yeah. Maybe laughing at and not with. But I would say corporate humor is 40-50%. I wish I had a slide that I could show you. It's like a pie chart.
Yeah, could you present this in a pie chart? I'm not. Yeah.
It's the radio. The audience doesn't know any better. Just say this slide.
Right. Oh, yeah. As you can see here, this is a four-dimensional pie.
Impressive.
Actually, which you don't. Yeah, again, with the PowerPoint. Yeah, so, you know, we have songs about being a teenage girl. We have this one sick song, which we don't do anymore, which is kind of a shame. Mostly we don't do it because Micah hates playing the beat because it's a very repetitive, demanding beat. And it's called The Prettiest Princess. And it's basically just Nickelback, but like singing about like, let me tell you a tale of a princess, the prettiest one in the land. And he just sort of goes on. It's like, you know,
and he has to kind of relentlessly like,
and he just hates it.
Yeah,
he really, and he hates Nickelback. And I mean, I hate Nickelback, but also love them.
Yeah,
because they write these. It's like, you know, he's like, you know, like has this. He's got sensitive rock star voice.
Yep,
which is very deeply humorous.
Yeah,
it's like, sensitive, you know, I couldn't kill a bull with a plank of wood, but I could also love you as tenderly as the ocean breeze. And like, oh, you really have quite the range, Mr. Kruger.
You are a Renaissance man, sir.
Yeah, you're the latter-day Leonardo da Vinci. We cannot do enough to fet you.
Right, yeah.
So we have songs like that.
Cool. So how did you guys, I mean, is this something where you guys were friends before and you had kind of a... you realized you had kind of a similar sense of humor, started to write songs together? Or?
Yeah, sort of. We prior to New York, we lived in Arlington, which is outside of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in a big house with about 6 to 8 musicians and very squalid and disorderly.
Oh, that sounds great.
And so we were all in a band then. And before that, I didn't know him. He was friends of some friends. But, you know, we lived together pretty close. He just whooped on me relentlessly at ping pong. That band was not humorous. And even when we started playing together here in New York, we actually weren't doing primarily humorous stuff. And we have very different senses of humor, which is, I'm glad he's not here because he would contradict everything that I'm saying.
Oh, I see.
What I like about him, actually, what I like about writing with him is that he's very funny in, I think, a very different way from me.
Gotcha.
And I would have trouble classifying it more specifically, but I think that's more fun when you're working with someone who is different, but complementary.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a member of a 2-person comedy writing team as well. And it's definitely, and we also have very different styles, but it's good when you can say something, you can approach a joke or whatever in one way, and as even if it's different than the other way the other person would, as long as their response to that is like, yes, I like that, as opposed to, wait, what? That that doesn't make any sense. And then there's an awkward silence.
That is true, although I don't want to contradict you, but like, he will often, I will say something that I think is the funniest thing that I have ever said.
Right. Here comes a little bit of gold.
Yeah, I'd be like, dude, this is going to be amazing. And he's like, yeah, I could see how that is funny. I'm like, what is wrong with you? You laughed at the thing with where we were talking. We were just talking about poop. It wasn't even like contextualized in a humorous way. We were just like, poop, 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 poop. And that was funny to you, but this unbelievably witty thing where, oh my God. And so that, in a strange way, is energizing because he's like the unscalable wall for witty stuff.
Right. If you get something through, you're like, oh no, this is funny.
Yeah, I'm like, this truly appeals to everyone.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, so speaking of having a relationship with somebody that can be very multidimensional in this way, you guys just spent the entire month of August, is that correct,
yes,
in Edinburgh for the Fringe Festival?
It is indeed.
And I saw on your website that you played 25 shows.
Yes.
In the course of that time?
In 26 wow. days.
25 wow. shows in 26 days. And you were busking during the day. Is this
yeah,
true?
Yeah, we were. Yeah.
So I would imagine that you get a sense really quickly of what songs you have that you like and what songs you have that you never want to play yeah, again. Yeah.
And by the end, they're all in that second category. Okay. Yeah. You just really want to write something new because you're like, oh my God, we have to sing this chorus another fucking time.
I can't stand it.
This
anymore.
Is, how could anyone find this humorous? This is the worst thing in the world. But yeah, the audience has responded to it. So that was good. I think it would have been, 25 shows would have been impossible and demoralizing if we didn't have the audience response that we had. But mm-hmm. people were very positive about it, especially weirdly at the beginning and then again at the end. We kind of got this bump in attendance and response, and yeah, it was great. And I mean, there were different kinds of audiences too, and some were better than others. Like our busking technique was extremely aggressive, more so I think than any other company. We would just like come kind of shimmying up to like
okay,
usually
right.
like never an all-male group, usually either a couple or like uh-huh. a gaggle of teenage girls, of which there were myriad there. It was just
myriad
like
gaggles.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the schoolgirl capital of the world. It was, and we found that they were pretty susceptible to what we were doing, which is strange because it wasn't like, you know, I can see if it was Hugh Jackman doing it, yeah, sure, but it's us. I look like a stick insect, and Micah's eyes are kind of bugging out a little bit. And we're also singing in these falsetto voices that right. are funny and not at all like, you know, oh, I'm a teenage girl. This is a manly man.
Right, right, right.
You know, instead,
you weren't going Nickelback on him. No, that's what you're saying.
We weren't. We can't do that. Like, only he can do it. That's yep. why it's so wonderful. No, but we were coming. We would have these flyers. Everyone has flyers when they're promoting their show at the mm-hmm. Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And it all happens in a pretty densely populated space. So okay. all the festival goers are there and all of the performers are there. And the performers have flyers and they are just handing them out, and pretty quickly everyone gets kind of sick of it and like their flyering technique just becomes terrible and it's just like, here.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it just kind of like, you know, okay, no, you're not gonna take it. No, of course you're not gonna take it. We have an audience of 12 people and I'm so tired of being Frog Hamlet. Yeah. You know, like exactly. it's like that.
And I never want to play these songs again.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but because we're just insane and pathologically addicted to attention, we were able to keep the energy up, and so we come up with a flyer and we're like, you know, ooh, yeah. Oh yeah, hey. We're kind of like coming, and you're like, "What the hell is this?" Finally, you take the flyer. Here we go, and I got you to take a flyer. Ooh, just got you to take a flyer. And then, like, you take it, and you took a flyer too. Sorry, I'm not warmed up, so I'm a little pitchy right now. As Randy Jackson would say.
Well, then me as a 17-year-old Scottish young lady would be like, "Oh, I."
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear more of these.
I want to play for fire on a Sunday face. Like, what the fuck are you?
Are you making fun of me?
You are smiling, so I'm just going to assume that this is good. So we get them to come to the show. But then here's the thing. They come to the show, and corporate humor is not their thing. So we're like,
it's probably,
you're like,
doesn't translate
you know
that well.
You're in the office, and like you're making this awkward water cooler conversation. Like, what is he talking about? I don't brought it back to the house. It's like, but then afterwards, like, it was well good. It was well good.
All right, yeah.
And, oh, well, I'm glad you like it. So they would come. That wasn't the best group. The best group were usually like, you know, like 20 somethings, and there were some of them. And then sometimes we would get Spaniards. And Spaniards were hilarious because they love the kind of outgoing stuff that we're doing in the street. Mm-hmm. And also that stuff is less, there's less like tricky language in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we do a bagpipe impression, which is Micah like doing a melody, and I'm just there going like, wah.
know, I can like open my mouth really wide and it looks horrifying, but does entice people somehow. And so we do that, and that appeals to, I think, anyone. Or not, you know, but it doesn't, there's no, you don't need to speak English to understand it.
Right.
And then
they
come to the show. And unfortunately, you do need to have pretty good English to understand a lot of the jokes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, afterwards they're like,
I like the show. I think it's good. I like the music. I don't understand everything.
And you're like, no, you don't understand it. No, you didn't. But maybe you did in a way that I don't understand.
Right, so, right. So, yeah. So now, would you say this experience of playing 25 shows in 26 nights, in terms of how it affected your guys' dynamic as a band, did you come back feeling like really energized? Did you come back feeling like maybe we should take a little break for a little while?
Yeah.
Get our groove back a little?
Yeah, that is what we ended up doing. I think it was good to do that. Mm-hmm. Because actually, I live in Brooklyn, and Micah had lived in Brooklyn up to that point, but he moved to Boston. So mm-hmm. now we have a long-distance relationship, which, of course, doesn't mean that the band is defunct, but it does mean that we play less and aren't really writing right now. We developed, you know, a songbook of about 20, 25 songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can really, we don't need to add to that. Obviously, it'd be nice to at some point down the road. But, you know, now we can just meet up and rehearse. And the stuff does come back pretty quickly,
which is
reassuring that mm-hmm. like you can devote a significant chunk of your life to a 48-minute, you know, explosion of absurdity and squealing, and then it does stay with you at least.
Yeah,
like, you know, despite the bleak absurdity of doing something like that, like at the very least you have something to show for it.
Like you have muscle memory at minimum.
You do. You do. Yeah. If you like, muscle memory is a good word. We met recently to rehearse for our upcoming show,
mm-hmm.
which maybe I should plug at this point.
Yeah.
Which is going to be December 18th, Bar 4, which is 7th Ave at 15th Street, Park Slope. Terrific venue.
Yep.
Nice and cozy. They'll have some screens for the PowerPoint.
Good.
Which is the best part of the show. And it's a Saturday night, 9 p.m. We have an hour slot. Show up early, show up often.
Now, one of our traditions here on Road to Shambhala is asking music guests to start beefs on the air with other rival bands.
Yeah.
So you've already mentioned Nickelback. So you can go ahead and start, you know, officially start a beef with them, or you could pick any other artist.
Oh my God.
Well, we should say that one artist is off the board. And that's Limp Bizkit.
That's true.
Because when
bitches.
Yeah. It was stated by our previous guest, Ms. Isolt Tyler of band Quiet Lights. And I quote, "Limp Bizkit is bitches," which I think so shattered their what was left of their egos.
Yeah, yeah. And that, God only knows how that was spelled.
Yeah, yeah.
When she said that.
I mean, it was definitely I-Z.
Yeah.
Bitches.
Yeah.
So they've been too stunned to even respond.
Yeah, it wouldn't really be fair to kick them while they're down.
Yeah,
so lay off Limp for
true.
A little bit.
Yeah. No, those guys, are you kidding? Those guys are my boys.
Okay, good.
I would start with Linkin Park, but they're too similar to Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
And also, it's a bit sort of a fish in the barrel thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love beefs. Beefs are the greatest part of music.
That's what's for dinner,
I know, right?
Let's see here. Who can we pick on? Let's pick on Wiz Khalifa. He's a rapper.
Oh, nice.
Whoa.
And he's from Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from.
Ghost
Steelers, who are playing right now. I really hope that they are winning.
Mm-hmm.
Wiz Khalifa, all right. First of all, claims to smoke $10,000 of marijuana a month.
Good God.
Wow.
God.
His marijuana budget is $120,000 a month. Wiz Khalifa, what about charity? All right? You know what? Smoke, you can even smoke just as much. Just smoke a slightly lower quality herb.
Yeah. You're smoking that much, it won't matter anyway.
Yeah. If you're that high, how are you able to distinguish between particular weed varietals?
Exactly. So, like, just like, you know, Amnesty International or something, like, just figure it out. And also, okay, his song Black and Yellow, I mean, I have to love it because I'm from Pittsburgh.
Black okay.
And yellow, and black and yellow.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, which is hard to sing. It's deceptively it difficult. Yeah.
Especially because you're afraid the bumblebees are going to hear it and come after you.
But the, yeah.
It's always a risk.
I'm sure, I think I feel comfortable stating that's probably his greatest fear.
It should
if
be.
If he's that high, probably.
You know what? Second greatest fear, because I'm coming after him.
Okay, all right.
Black
all
and right. yellow. It's black and gold. Ask any Pittsburgher. It's not black and yellow. It does look yellow. I know the Saints are actually black and gold, but it's black and gold.
All
right. To quote Dave Damashek, a somewhat astringent radio personality, I don't care if you're black or white. I just care if you're black and gold.
All right.
Boom.
All right.
So, all right. Yeah. And also, the chorus for that song is like the first half of it, he's not even saying anything. It's like, bounce. Ah, you know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow. You know, yes, I do know what it is. What is it? You know, I hate that in rap where that you use a pronoun and there's no antecedent to it. You know what it is. I don't think I do.
No, please clarify.
Yeah, like it's just laziness. It's sloppiness. Smoke less marijuana.
Yep, yep. All right. Well, listen, Wiz Khalifa.
You started.
Yeah,
you started.
You better hope the bees get you, because otherwise Jesse Andrews is knocking at your door.
And then it's Faith Hill. Yeah.
Oh, we got two beefs. Two beefs.
I can start an unlimited quantity of beefs right now.
There's a lot of red meat.
I am feeling feisty. All right. Sorry, this interview is more combative than...
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, we got to... I got to give you another glass of wine to settle you down here.
Yeah.
All right.
Some barbiturates in it. It's 4 o'clock. I need them.
Yeah, right. Well, while I get that for you, why don't we play for the good peoples a sample of a tune by the Young Dads. This is one of my favorites, and it is available at theyoungdads.bandcamp.com, where you can buy their EP for only $5. Very reasonable price. And this is a very hilarious song called Four Item Lists.
Languages, women's studies.
The humanities.
Pyeongchang, Hanoi, Kuala Lumpur, Naypyidaw.
Southeast Asian capitals.
Ayatollah Khomeini, Cat Stevens, Khalid from down the street, Jafar.
Muslims.
Schnitzel, Bar Salad, Barbecue, Cordon Bleu. Communication, goal setting, respect.
Habits of a healthy working environment.
Great home step, a tough divorce, mental health day, the 24-hour bug.
Excuses, the conventional excuses.
Alcoholism, road rage, sexual harassment, unnecessary profanity.
Stereotypes of blue-collar males.
Congo. The Andromeda Strain, Jurassic Park.
Books by Michael Crichton.
Dibbles, sliders, chicken parmesan tanglers, crispers.
Applebee's shareable starters.
Genesis, Sonata, Santa Fe, Accent.
The Hyundai family of automobiles.
Pains, Nike, Gatorade, McDonald's.
Michael Jordan's corporate sponsors.
Gluten allergy, Atkins diet, Kashrut, insecurities.
Dietary limitations.
Job interview, doctor's appointment, meeting the mother-in-law to be, the critical third date.
Scenarios.
Capital A, capital E, X, Y.
Letters that don't have curves in them. Letters that don't have curves in them.
The burrito was mad.
All right. That is the Young Dads from their EP. Self-titled, yes?
Yeah,
it's called The Young Dads. And that's at theyoungdads.bandcamp.com. You want to get over there and check that out, as well as going to Bar 4 next Saturday night at 8 p.m.
9 p.m.
9 p.m.
Yeah, 8 p.m. is fine, though.
Yeah, come at 8 p.m.
I'm sure someone good will be there.
Yeah, tie a couple on. Get ready for the show.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we just got time for a quick round of Vital Topics. So the name of this program, as we're all hopefully aware, is The Road to Shambhala. And Shambhala is, of course, as we all know, the mythical city of transcendence and enlightenment that Buddhist mythology says we are all traveling towards but will never reach. Namaste, by the way, to everybody.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Earlier this week, Garrett and I were discussing other cities around the country that tempt us when New York gets to be a little bit too much. So I was wondering what metropolises you guys dream of escaping to from time to time and why. Where would you guys venture to?
Long list of places I want to go. I feel like I frequently think of like Denver, Milwaukee, San Francisco.
And now is this bratwurst related? Milwaukee?
Yeah. I mean, Milwaukee, I've never been, so I can't actually say what I'm going to do it. But it seems like they like cheese, beer, football.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's about it.
Underrated. Yeah, Milwaukee is great.
Yeah. And plus, like, you never meet anyone from Milwaukee because no one ever leaves Milwaukee. Why would they?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
But I think, like, Portland, Oregon or Vancouver or something would be, like, the place that would make the most sense.
Yep. Yeah, I do. I have a vision of Portland. I've never been, as being entirely comprised of microbreweries and coffee shops. And bookstores.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And bike lanes.
And bike lanes.
Yeah. It's just like this like small paradise.
Yeah. Unfortunately, also exclusively white people, I think.
And no jobs.
And no jobs.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
A lot of unemployed honkies.
Yeah.
Are we talking now, is this assuming I have to relocate out of New York City, or is this a good place to visit when I feel a need to get away for a couple weeks?
This would be relocation. This would be relocation.
That's going to change my chain. I was going to say Cape Town. South Africa.
Yeah. Oh.
But I'm not sure I ever want to like permanently relocate there. I would like to stay there for like a year maybe, but not as like a new place to live.
Word up.
Okay.
So with that in mind, I think that if I were going to relocate, I would go to Montalcino in Italy.
Really?
It's a very small like walled city in wine country, Italy. And it's one of those places that like every single building people have been living there. It's, you know, built in 1220 and it all has the same woodwork and all that good stuff. But the talk about friendliness of strangers. When we were there, I was there with my family, and it was the kind of place where, like, if you walked down the street, you had to, like, keep your eyes down, because you made eye contact with anybody, you would be invited into their house,
right?
Like, given food, sat down. Like, all it took was just, like, seeing them from across the street and you were done.
Yeah. Right. Kind of like your interaction on the subway.
Right. But the total opposite.
Yeah, right. Minus, you know, the
more supportive
unchecked aggression.
Don't end up like supporting them as you're both walking down the street.
Well, you do, actually. You do, as it turns out, because everyone has this amazing wine that they all grow in their backyard. So you end up supporting people and walking down streets. But it's a little.
But they're not shouting about how you're both going to get your dick sucked.
Well, probably. And then I don't speak Italian. I can't say for sure.
That's great. Like, they bring you into their house. They like talk at you for hours and hours and hours. They give you wine, you're like, this is great, and the whole time they're like, we want answers.
Wine will make them talk.
Yeah. Oh, you're good. Yeah. This is a great question.
That's I think that's where I would go to live.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess list places. Yonkers. First up. All right.
Really?
I was wondering when somebody was going to drop the Y bomb. Yeah.
And I just did. Yonkers rhymes with bonkers. And also, whenever you're filling out your taxes, it's always like, by the way, if you live in Yonkers, this is exponentially more complicated. Yeah. And there has to be a reason for that. So maybe their public services are really good.
I worked for a political campaign in which Yonkers was one half of the canvassable area.
Yeah.
You don't want to go to Yonkers.
Oh, no? Nah, all right, no Yonkers. All right,
but they wouldn't charge you more unless it was great to live there.
Yeah.
So you want to move there for the silly name and complicated taxes.
Wait, that's a bumper sticker. Their tourist department
sells it. Move for the silly name. Stay for the complicated taxes.
Yeah. Montevideo in Uruguay. My family lived there for about a year. I was in college, so I was only there for 2 months. But the great thing about it is that everyone is utterly incredulous that you've chosen to live in Uruguay. And so, like, people are constantly like, I can't believe it. What are you doing in this little country? This is so great. And that reaction just never gets old to me.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea of a populace where the kind of default state is incredulity is fantastic idea.
Yeah, yeah. They're just, yeah. So
why are you here?
What are you doing here? And it's also, is you're constantly being posed with this existential question, which, you know, it's good for an artist.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
Here's, I'm going to throw something out here as a potential dark horse candidate in a place to move to.
Okay.
Detroit.
Hmm. Now, wow, that's a dark horse.
Dark horse. Given the fact that right now Detroit is, you know, not doing so hot,
mm-hmm.
There are some problems with Detroit as a municipality, but there are also large, large blocks of formerly urban environments that are entirely empty. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody's there. So for about $5, you can buy a house.
Hmm. $5?
$5.
And throw a rave.
Yeah. You can throw a kinkin' party. You have to grow your own food because there's no access to services. And you have to bring solar panels. But $5, house. Yeah. I'm saying.
That's not New Yorker, unappealing.
Having lived in New York for long enough now that I am acclimated to, at least slightly, to the New York renting prices.
Right.
And I've come to terms with the fact that I will never, ever, 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 ever be able to afford an actual building of my own. There's some appeal to, you know, what I can scrape out of my couch cushions can give me an actual four walls and a roof.
Yeah.
But you have to factor in the cost of buying a gun because you got to have
a gun. There's no one out there.
In Detroit?
There are large blocks of places where people have just totally abandoned it.
What about feral animals?
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, and to be fair,
a spear, maybe.
Yeah.
If you if you start throwing raves, eventually you're going to have rival raves.
yeah.
And you may they may end up being talk about beefs.
But then you can just dance fight. You don't have to actually shoot.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. You can you can pretend you're glow sticks or lightsabers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Their tax system has got to be the simplest thing in the world. Yeah. Because it's like, you know.
Income zero. Check.
Yeah, check here if you have an income. You're done.
Yeah.
If you do, you are elected.
You've been elected mayor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Can we live at your house? Yeah. Yeah, just one of the extra ones that you got because they cost less than
jujubes.
Yeah.
I have to say, when I came up with this as a topic for discussion, the last two places I expected to hear were Yonkers and Detroit. but that's the value of vital topics. All right. Well, before we go, I think we should get some closing thoughts on all this, kind of tie things up in a nice bow from our wizened archivist, Mr. G.T. Boswell, who filed the following report.
Hello, this is G.T. Boswell on the road to Shamala. Merry Christmas and good tidings of joy to you and all of your kids. I have no offspring myself, but my hormonal brother Abernathy has a few. He is in trouble because he does not pay the woman their child support payments. He says they are not his children. They have blue eyes. I do not know if he is telling the truth. I am colorblind. I also forgot to say happy Hanukkah to my friend Isaac. Have a tequila, my friend. And this is G.T. Boswell. Good night and good luck.
All right. All right, so that is Boswell's closing thoughts, and that is the end of Exit 24 on the road to Shambhala, easing into your rearview mirrors. Thank you very much for joining us, whether you're live with us right now or tuned into the podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we look forward to lightening up your afternoon again next week when, among other things, we'll have an interview with the creators of a radio play version of H.G. Wells' The Time Machine that is currently playing at the Red Room in East Village. Until then, however, we would like to extend our very sincere gratitude to Mr. Jesse Andrews for being with us today.
Thank you.
And we hope you will go check out the Young Dads next Saturday night right here in Brooklyn, New York, and also on their website, theyoungdads.com, I believe, is the URL.
Yes, indeed.
Our thanks also, as always, to Garrett Hall, Alan Smith, DJ Flav, and GT Boswell, along with our sincere apologies, or mine anyway, to Senator Joseph Lieberman. The Road to Shambhala is copyright 2010, Bright Machine Productions, and was recorded and produced at Hootenanny Studios right here in Brooklyn, New York. As you make your way this week, please remember, in the words of the inimitable John Miller and the immortal Dr. Bob Frapples, swing hard in case you hit it, and they're not all going to be home runs.